The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.
Hello and welcome to the KM Community Podcast. I'm your host Oliver Kemp and I'll be bringing you the stories that matter at the heart of communities across the county. If you have a story you think needs to be told, just use the hashtag KM Community on social media or you can email me on okemp@thekmgroup.co.uk. This week, addiction is affecting people in the UK more than ever. A report by the Centre for Social Justice revealed about 1 in 3 drug deaths by overdose that occur in Europe happen in this country. The NHS has estimated that there were 338,000 admissions where the primary reason for admission to hospital was attributed to alcohol. Moreover, only 2% of the nearly 430,000 problem gamblers are actually in treatment. How can we combat the grip of addiction on our society? To look for answers, I visited the Recovery Lodge in Sittingbourne, a private residential drug rehab. The company was started by Jamie Cheney, who first began drinking at the age of 8.
Looking back now in hindsight, after being in recovery for a long period of time, I had this disease of self within me from like primary school, you know, having to feel superior to everyone, and if I felt inferior, building that wall, that putting that facade up to stop anyone coming in and hurting me, you know, dysfunctional family, and yeah, it was loads going on from when I was young, but you block all that out and put on a front and try and be the best person you can. And I found alcohol at the age of 8, and wow, I tasted it and it was disgusting, but what it done to me was, well, euphoric, you know. And I drank to blackout at the age of 8, whiskey, and I never done it continuously up until the age of 14. Yeah, and I was drinking daily from then up to the age of about 30, 31. Had a massive stroke and stuff. And yeah, but before I lost licence and police cells and prisons, institutions. And then eventually I went into treatment myself a couple of times. It wasn't until I surrendered to me that I needed help from something more powerful than me, and that's when everything started to change, you know. Because my mental defence was to protect me from feeling, really, having any feeling and emotions. And when I did get them feelings and emotions, I used alcohol to dilute that so I could... Yeah, it's just all a false bravado around how you need to be and being happy. I was never happy until I come into recovery. I didn't know how to be happy. I didn't know how to be. And my life was driven by alcohol, you know, and quite successful. And then it stopped working, and then I was banging in trouble, and that's when I went into treatment. I watched my dad, and he used to bring clients home from work and stuff, and he used to sit there and have a drink in the drinks cabinet, and I thought it was a cool thing to do, you know, and I've done it, but loved it. So I've learnt now that it affects us different to normal people, and it creates an allergy, and I have a mental obsession. I'm an addict, alcoholic, so it's... manifests itself in many different ways, not just alcohol or the drug of choice. Well, alcohol is a drug, but in liquid form, you know. It's my behaviours, my dishonesty. Can never be honest, didn't know what that meant, you know.
Jamie explained to me that it's easy to find excuses to having an addiction, but the important thing is to take ownership and do something about it.
It was an excellent place to grow up, but not in that household. But my head would tell me that I was born to the wrong parents, went to the wrong school, live in the wrong country, you know what I mean? And if it, the justification there of my behaviour, so it's looking at it and being and accepting what is, and going with that, you know, you've been dealt that hand. So it's, yeah, it's been a roller coaster of a journey. I'm in a real good place at the moment, you know, especially delivering what we deliver here. I develop and build for a living, but this is where my passion is, because it saved my life, and we're doing the same for others, you know, on a daily basis, and seeing the light come on, that them having that light bulb moment and the realisation of they are the problem, not their mum, their dad or anyone else. So it's, they might have caused or added to the destruction within, but it's, we got to deal with this. We got to have them feelings. We got to have these emotions. We got to speak. We got to ask for help. In the past, all I tried to do all that in my head, you know. Anyone with a good career, I've got mentors, and that's what we suggest here, you know, when they leave and get into mutual aid meetings. Get yourself a sponsor, someone to take them through this work properly, you know. And rehabilitation, people come in here for 28 days up to a 3-month period. You're just discovering yourself. So it's, and we take them to mutual aid meetings, and it's when they leave here, the aftercare, they come back here a couple of 3 or 4 times, but their aftercare is getting into the meetings, getting a sponsor and working a program on a daily basis, which I do. And that's where it really is, and that's when the happiness. So you got discovery in rehab, and then you got recovery in the anonymous fellowships. So, yeah, and that's how I see it, you know. We're just trying to make them look at themselves in here and go to places where they don't want to go. To open them up, and it's safe to get vulnerable here, you know. Professional people in a safe environment.
Jamie also admits the residential rehabilitation isn't a foolproof method. He relapsed after his first stint in rehab before successfully getting clean a second time.
I went in for 6 weeks the first time. Pay your money, you know, and you think you're going to come out fixed, but that's not the case, and I found that out. And I come out, it was 3 months later. I was trying to go to AA and stuff. But the truth of it was, I couldn't get honest in rehab the first time round, especially not to me. I was lying to me and everyone else in there. And just thought I was going to be... I tick boxed it, done it as an exercise, really, when I needed to do it from my heart. This is from within. It's an inside job, so we need to look within. And it is painful sometimes. All the time. It's still painful now, you know. A lot of people don't want to stop drinking. They come in here to try and be able to go out there and drink properly. But it's a program of abstinence, so which we deliver. And we drum that into them. It's paramount that they know that. But some of them go out there and do a bit more research. And unfortunately, we've had a few people come back a couple of times, but not many. We're quite successful here in what we deliver. And I swear by it, you know, I'm living proof, and as long as I keep doing what I'm doing on a daily basis.
This week, Jamie is organising Recovery Week, an event across social media to raise awareness to the stigma surrounding addicts and encouraging those struggling to reach out and get help.
It's about trying to become united and make people aware, you know. It's a unity of people. Everyone in their family must have someone who suffers from some form of addiction. So it's trying to make everyone aware, the families, the mums and dads, the brothers and sisters, of the stuff suffering addicts. And they are suffering, you know, and they're trying to change the way they feel. Underlying mental health, you know, which there's not a lot of it out there at the minute. They're shutting places down that should be they should be opening places. And everyone becoming more aware of this mental health, you know, and there's adverts on the TV and stuff, and I know a lot of people who have committed suicide through this illness. When the drink and drugs stop working, if they can't be honest with themselves and ask for help, the next alternative is to take their own lives, and some very good friends of mine have done that in the past. So that's how evil this illness is, you know.
Julian Blackmore is a group psychotherapist at the Recovery Lodge and also has his own addiction story.
I used a lots of different types of drug, particularly cannabis, but alcohol is really my story. And I started drinking at a very young age. You know, that Christmas time, I loved it. I was able to drink baby sham and sherry, sweet alcoholic drinks that kids kind of like. And so it was very natural, you know, to start drinking sort of pints of bitter when I was 16, 17. I was a sportsman back in those days, so, you know, particularly cricket. And so, you know, there was what we used to call the apéro cricket, you know, was kind of, was drinking pints of bitter or light and bitter and so on. And every week that went past, you know, it was a matter of pride to have one more pint than you had before. Now, I went to university and my drinking was never a massive issue then. In fact, it was actually sort of when I trained as a teacher, I was about 22, 23, that my drinking really took off. And I started drinking regularly during the day as well as, and it started to affect my life. It affected my emotional life. It affected my professional life. I didn't have a career as a school teacher because of my drinking and drug use. Mind you, I don't think I ever could have been much of a school teacher anyway. I don't think I'm cut out for that kind of thing. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. It damaged, in the end, my drinking damaged every aspect of my life, my romantic life, my emotional life, my intellectual life. It cut into every area and became the most important thing in my life. That's what happens in addiction. It becomes the most important thing. So that's why when wives or husbands say, if you loved me and if you loved the children, you would stop doing this thing, alcoholics and addicts, though a part of them may acknowledge that they need to do that, they're actually unable to do that because the addictive behaviour is dominating. It almost becomes like the master clock of everything. It dominates all behaviour, everything, kind of, you know, all roads lead back to the addictive behaviour. And a lot of addicts are kind of risk takers by nature, and they gamble on the fact that somehow or other they will be able to get away with it.
Now, the Recovery Lodge is private, which means a struggling addict would need to find the funds to pay to stay here. Julian believes the government should be putting more money into residential recovery, which he believes is the best way to get clean.
I mean, I think it's a sort of a healthcare disgrace, actually. I think it's a scandal that treatment, the sort of treatment that we offer is not available more freely. I don't think it should. I think in a way it's quite good that people kind of pay for it because when you pay for something, it means that you're more likely to want to get value for money, as it were. Sometimes when things are kind of just freely offered to people, then they kind of take them for granted. Nevertheless, unfortunately, what seems to work best for addiction is residential treatment. And that has the function of it has a twofold function. One, the building of relationships within that sort of residential setting is of crucial importance. But secondly, it kind of removes people from the immediate environment of their using or drinking. And sometimes that needs to happen. You know, one of the reasons that sort of daycare isn't so effective is that people kind of at a very early stage of looking at all of this, you know, have to go back to their kind of familiar environment, and there are all the cues there, you know, to return to using. So I believe anyway, and I was in treatment myself in 1988, that's a hell of a long time ago. Anyway, residential treatment and a group therapy setting is, in my opinion, the best method.
As we head towards another election, people like Julian and Jamie will be hoping to see better provision offered to addicts by whichever government ends up in power. Thanks for listening to this week's episode on addiction. If you want to share your story, use the hashtag KMCommunity. And if you want to contact me directly, send me an email at okemp@thekmgroup.co.uk.
The KM Community Podcast, bringing you stories from Kent's communities every week.